If you are a longtime viewer of Upfront, then you are probably used to seeing my next guest argue his way through some pretty tough interviews in this very studio. Mehdi Hassan is a man who knows how to win an argument. He was the first host of Upfront and Head to Head here on Al Jazeera English, and he's now the host of The Mehdi Hassan Show on MSNBC and on Peacock here in the United States. He's also an author. He has a new book. It's called Win Every Argument, The Art of Debating, Persuading, and Public Speaking. And it is full of tips and tricks on how to win an argument, whether it's at home, in a debating chamber, or on TV. Mehdi, good to see you.
Good to see you, Mark. So lovely to be here.
How does it feel to come back?
Feels weird. Should I go sit there and you come sit here?
Will you yell at me?
No yelling, but we'll argue.
Intensely.
No, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me. It's so much fun.
No, it's great also to talk about this book. I've read it and closely, and I was persuaded in certain ways. Why'd you write it now?
I wrote it now. Well, the short answer is there was a pandemic, so I started writing. The long answer is politically, I do believe we're in a moment where our public spaces, both in the US and around the world, I've just come back from the UK, have been taken over by gaslighters, people pushing nonsense, BS, false information, con men, grifters. And I believe that we need to retake our public square. We need to retake discourse. Democracy cannot survive if we can't have good faith disagreements. And unfortunately, we have too many bad faith disagreements these days. So I looked around, I saw what was going on. I said, look, I want to help people. I want to equip people with the rhetorical skills they need to push back against this nonsense.
So I found all the tips persuasive. I was convinced by all of them. These will work. The thing that kept ringing in my mind is, are we giving in to the grifters by arguing on their level, by wallowing in the mud with them? Should we be trying to attain a higher level?
Yes and no. So in an ideal world, of course, we should be attaining a higher level. I have my own rules, and I say, you know what? I have a hygiene test. I won't have an election denier on the show. It means I can't interview a lot of Republican politicians who I might want to interview, but I don't want to give a platform to people who say Joe Biden isn't the president. I don't want to give a platform to climate change deniers, Holocaust deniers. Just, I'll argue with anyone. People who know me know I love arguing. But I have to draw a line somewhere. I won't argue reality. I'm not going to argue up is down, hot is cold, black is white. I'm not going to argue with conspiracy theorists. You're right. I won't wallow in the mud with certain people. With others, yes. But that's kind of the big abstract point. The specific point is you can't avoid some of these people, Mark. We live in a world now where, you know, there was a time when a lot of people would say to me, well, you know, you do what you do, I'm going to keep my head down. None of us can keep our heads down anymore. If you're in the United States, for example, as we are right now, democracy is existentially threatened. One of the two major political parties has been taken over by neo-fascists, cultists, conspiracy theorists, authoritarians. There's no scenario in which you could say, well, you know what? I'm just going to mind my own business. I'm not, you know, that's for them. This is for me. No, the argument's coming to you whether you want it or not. And what I find frustrating is I see liberals, leftists, progressives, small-D Democrats who may have the facts and the figures. We've got the truth, but they can't persuade other people. They don't know how to convey it to others. There's no point having all the knowledge and all the facts and all the wisdom if you can't get it across to the people who need it. So I'm saying, great, have your wonderful facts, have your highbrow conversations, but at some point, yeah, you're going to have to push back against the people I call gish gallopers in the book, the people who just want to knock you down with misinformation. You're going to have to push back.
One of the things you talk about is knowing the audience, how important it is to recognize who you're talking to. What does that mean in practical terms, in terms of engaged media conversations on controversial issues?
So, I mean, it's interesting. We're sitting here on Al Jazeera English. A global audience is watching us. When I do my show every week, it's mainly an American audience watching me. So as a journalist, you tailor your message to who's in front of you. And I would argue not just as a journalist, as any person in a public forum or even a private forum. If you're around the dinner table with your MAGA-loving uncle at Thanksgiving, you are going to take a different approach to convincing that MAGA-loving uncle as you are with maybe an auditorium full of students at your university or college or in a boardroom at work. I'm not saying be two-faced. I'm saying say the same thing you want to say, make the same argument, have the same beliefs and principles, but tailor them to who is in front of you. Know who your audience. So, for example, if I'm dealing with an American audience and I'm talking about Afghanistan, right, I'm going to talk to that American and I want to make the case that the Afghan war was wrong and Joe Biden was right to pull out, which I did on my show.
Myth.
I'm going to make the case along the lines of, this cost the American public a great deal of blood and treasure. Now, that doesn't mean I also don't believe it cost Afghans a lot of lives. It destroyed Afghanistan. It was a geopolitical nightmare. Those are all great. But what's the number one argument I'm going to make to my viewers? This didn't help you, right? Because they're the people...
That's what scares me just a little bit. Because part of the challenge of this is when people tailor their message to audiences in the context you're describing, this neo-fascist moment, this authoritarian moment, is that they're playing to people's fears, also to their biases. And so if we live in a world where Afghan lives are disposable already, and we only focus on the budget, that, you know...
It's not only. So
or we prioritize
it. That's a good point,
it.
But it's also about prioritizing. It's also about... You need to get your message across to people. You need to convince a skeptical person. You need to get through the door. And what I'm suggesting in the book is here are some tricks and techniques to get you through the door. Once you're through the door, yes, bring up everything else. Bring up the cost to Afghan lives. Bring up the geopolitical problems. But how do you get through the door? We live in a world where the door is shut far too often these days. We're very, very polarized. People don't want to hear a liberal if they're a conservative. They don't want to hear a conservative if they're liberal. And also, I would just say, you know, you say play to people's biases. That's the world we live in, Mark. This is a very practical book. It's not written for kind of ancient Greece utopian debate chambers. It's written for the real world. And I say in the real world, people are biased. People are afraid. People do feel their way towards a conclusion. They don't rationally think their way towards a conclusion. That's who I'm dealing with? Well, that's how I have to adapt.
So this is the last thing I'll ask you on this. Isn't that the same argument that Trump could make? Like, hey, I think immigration really is bad, or I think we do need better border security, so I'll tell them they're taking your jobs, or they're sending criminals and rapists across the border, because that's what their fears are, that's what their biases are. And so, therefore, I can appeal to my audience. Yeah. You know, and my fear about that is that, it reinforces the bad stuff.
So my question to you then, Mark, is what do you do in response? Because Trump's doing that anyways,
right.
And he's doing it masterfully. As much as we might laugh at his lack of, you know, eloquence and his ignorance, etc., he does know how to press the right buttons. He does know how to rouse a crowd. He does know how to get people to the polling stations. He does it in the darkest way possible. He appeals to our worst emotions, fear, loathing, paranoia, prejudice. I'm not saying appeal to those same emotions. I'm just saying appeal to emotion. But, you know, for example, if you're a liberal or a leftist, you can inspire people with hope, with solidarity, with a common vision of a shared future. But inspire people.
How do you do that and still hold on, if you even want to these sort of traditional journalistic principles of objectivity, distance? In the book, you're very clear. Pathos is the way to go.
Yes.
Appealing to the emotions, as you're saying now. How do you do that, but also hold on to some sense of journalistic objectivity?
So the second chapter is about appealing to emotion and pathos, as Aristotle put it. The third chapter is on logos. It's on facts. I'm not saying drop the facts. I'm not Kellyanne Conway. Alternative factor. I'm saying facts matter, feelings matter. Feelings tend to matter more than facts. So go ahead with feelings, but make sure facts follow you the way through. You know, anyone who knows me, who's watched this show, knows I love my facts. I love my receipts. The chapter is called Show Your Receipts.
That's one of my favorite ones.
I come and say, you know what? I'm the guy who says to, you know, whoever it is, you said this in 2009. How come you said that? No, I've got the transcript right here. That's what I'm known for, right? So I'm not saying drop facts. I'm saying we need all that. But, you know, you mentioned the word objectivity. It's a word I struggle with these days because I think journalists have hidden behind this abstract idea of objectivity to avoid having to take some important moral positions.
Like what?
The classic example, we're in the US. For several years, while Trump was president, journalists would not say the word lie. They would not say the word racist because they were taught in J school, you don't say stuff like that. You don't question what's in someone's heart. You play both sides. And I say, no, it took a long time for people to realize we live in an authoritarian moment. You have to be able to call a lie a lie. The New York Times has used racially tinted, racially coded, racially divisive. Just say racist in fewer letters. So now, slowly, some journalists are realizing, actually, you need to be able to call things out for what they are. Truth is more important than objectivity. Factual reality is more important. And if you're defining objectivity as some midpoint between the two parties, well, one of the two parties is now an authoritarian, anti-democratic movement, so you don't really want to be in a midpoint. And by the way, we as journalists, Mark, we have a bias. We have a bias to the truth. We have a bias to reality. We have a bias to democracy. We can't function as a free press, as a fourth estate, if democracy doesn't exist. So people say, I'm an unbiased journalist. No, you should have some biases. They're important to have.
Absolutely. And acknowledging what they are.
Acknowledging what they are.
Absolutely. How much of this is a U.S. thing? You talk about sort of being in the U.S. and U.K. at different moments. How much of this is particular to the rise of Trump and whatever's going on here?
I think it's very global. When I talk about Trump's America, I'm also thinking of Netanyahu's Israel, Erdogan's Turkey, Modi's India, Orban's Hungary, Putin's Russia, the UK under Boris Johnson for sure, when he was there, and his party is still doing some outrageous things. But also, when I sat in that seat and I interviewed ministers from around the world, you know something I noticed in 2017, 2018? Every time I would interview a minister from an African government, an Asian government, they sounded like Trump. They did the same. They had the same verbal tics. They were using the same tactics, the same fake news, the same trying to overwhelm you with a bunch of nonsense.
Yeah.
It wasn't just Trump and Trumpian people that I was interviewing. It was people around the world who were saying, cynically, that works. What that guy's doing in America, that works. So this is a global problem, sadly, for global media.
You've held a lot of people to account in this very studio. In your book, you give lots of examples from up front at Al Jazeera. What is your, I guess, favorite memory of a debate you had here?
One of my favorite memories, I tell it in the book, was standing right behind you with that monitor, talking to a man named Steve Rogers, not Captain America, sadly, but a Trump advisor in 2018. And it was, he was doing the Gish Gallop, what I say in the book. He was trying to just throw lots of nonsense and use up the time and make you move on. And what I say in the book is you need to do three things to stop that. You need to pick your battle, you need to not budge, and you need to call it out. Because he wanted to avoid the discussion whether Trump had lied about six steel mills. And I kept just sticking to that, picked my battle. I didn't budge. I said, no, talk to me about six steel mills. And he wanted to move on. At one point he said, just move on. I said, nope. And I called it out. I said, you want me to move on? Because you know it's a lie. I'm never going to say it's a lie. Okay, well, where are the six steel mills? That was me saying, everyone's got their own way of trying to take these people on. It's very hard to take these people on. Here's a possible way that you can do it. And I say to my fellow journalists, here is a one way you can do it. And we're getting to 2024. All these Gish Gallopers are going to be back on our
air. They're lining up.
Here is one way of trying to stop them dead in the middle.
Well, you are a Gish Galloper stopper, to be sure. You get a T-shirt with
Thank
that.
You.
Yes, this is an amazing book. I hope everybody checks it out. Mahdi, so good to see you. Welcome back.
It's been a pleasure, Mark.
Yes.
My favorite interview of the book, too.
Oh, that makes me happy. Everybody, thank you for watching. That is our show. Up Front, we'll be back next week.